Ladies and gentlemen, you are currently on hold for today's Aperam First Quarter 2023 Results Call. We're waiting the arrival of additional participants and should be starting shortly. Thank you for your patience and please continue to hold. Good day and welcome to today's Aperam First Quarter 2023 Results Call. This meeting is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to hand the call over to Tim Di Maulo, CEO. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to our conference call. I assume that all you have listened to our management podcast for the quarter, and here we detail the view of the current market environment and the outlook. If you still have work to do, the podcast is always available on website in the investor section for your reference. As usual, this call will always only be on a Q&A, so I now hand back to the operator for the Q&As.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question at this time, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. And please make sure the mute function on your phone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. Now, the first question comes from Patrick Mann from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much for the opportunity. Good day. I just wanted to ask, the shipment volumes were obviously very weak in the first quarter. Did the Genk shutdown for 6 weeks have any impact on that? I mean, do you think that without the AOD installation, you would have still had the same level of shipments, or is at some of the sort of decline in shipments year on year attributable to that? That's the first question. And then the second question, I just picked up on something Sud said in the podcast where he said, you know, for leadership journey phase 5, we should expect to see further tangible investments into improving the product mix and higher value portfolio to deliver the 300 million EBITDA improvement by 2025. Has anything changed there? I mean, are you feeling that in this current market environment, you've got to go further downstream or produce, you know, higher value added products to get to that 300 million? Or is this the same that you've, you know, sort of were expecting from Capital Markets Day last year, for example? Thanks very much.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the question. So first of all, I would like to remember that shipments in Q1 for Aperam are impacted by the seasonality of Brazil, which is the low season. Then we have indeed some destocking, which was anticipating due to the fact that Europe had remember ended the year with a lot of inventories and a lot of imports, and with the prices declining, the result has been that all the let's say the distributors in particular have been destocking, and this destocking leads to a level of imports that we currently assess as normal, but we still have some let's say the rotation, which is not at the normal level because of some slowdown of the consumption. If we want to go to discuss on leadership journey, I don't know if Sud will complement because you were referring to his comment, but fundamentally, there was there was a point on the AOD. AOD was, as it is in the upstream, is not directly impacting the Q1 because this this is in the supply chain. The AOD in the melt shop starts will be before the shipments, so the impact will be in Q2. Now, concerning leadership journey. The 300 million have been explained in our Capital Market Day, and we maintain the fact that all what we have explained and we have launched and is already there is part of the 300 million that we are progressively capturing in the days. So the target is 2025. The 300 million will be there. As you have seen, we are maintaining the path of the leadership journey, and you have also seen that we have accelerated and we will continue to accelerate because of the market tightness with only, let's say, to respect the phase four, we have only a few million still to go for the end of the year. Now, phase five is in preparation, and we will be, let's say, more explicit on the phase five at the end of the preparation of phase five. Of course, whatever it is possible to accelerate, whatever it is in product mix or any kind of other gain, we will do.
Got it. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Bastian Sienkiewicz from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I've got a couple of questions. Firstly, could I maybe ask what has been the impact from the strike and the 6-week maintenance break which you had, or the standstill in the first quarter, and then particularly how do you expect the strike situation to continue to impact in the second quarter? That is my first question.
Okay, so I will say that that strikes have had some impact, which is not let's say a big issue in the Q1. We don't know how the situation will evolve in France, so I can't because strike is mostly in France. We have had a couple of days also in Belgium, but fundamentally is the unrest in France. So we will see what will be the impact in the second part of the first half. Now the AOD is something which is in line with the what was our forecast. So it has been prepared. All in all, there is some let's say some impact, but this is in the very low level of numbers, maybe. In the low two digits EBITDA, but even lower. So it is. We will see at the end. But the AOD has been prepared, and the strike is still uncertain. What is the full scope. But it is split a little bit split in between the two quarters. The most impacted will be for sure second quarter, but not an extremely high importance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, perfect. Thanks, thanks, Tim. Then my second question is on volumes. I guess you pretty clearly state that you do expect some more volume recovery in the second quarter. In stainless and electrical steel, what is the magnitude of the rebound into the second quarter you're looking at? Obviously, first quarter volumes have improved, clearly not maybe as much as they could have. Do you expect to get back to what is usually like a normal volume range in stainless and electrical steel in the second quarter, i.e. like 270,000 tons, which I guess would be like a 20-25% rebound quarter over quarter? Or do you think it's going to be more likely less than that?
No. So the rebound will be there, of course, because of the seasonal rebound. But we are still in a market where the stocking has not been finalized, or at least not the restocking, because of the price pressure. So nobody today, there is a lot of let's say wait and see, due to the fact that prices are low for the moment. You know that prices are pushed down by the fact that nickel pig iron is very low, so the Chinese prices are low, and overall the prices in the rest of the world are putting some pressure on the intention of purchase of the distributors. And on top, there are especially in Europe, there is some slowdown in some sectors, and this is why in volumes, even if they are recovering for the seasonal, let's say, number of days, they are not at the high level.
Okay, so basically, you're looking at a more muted volume rebound into the second quarter from your comments then. Okay, and then maybe coming back also on prices, and you made a couple of important points, I guess, but if we look at the key dynamics now, we saw first quarter volumes at a low level, but there has still been a volume rebound of more than 20% over the fourth quarter, when I guess this stocking was very, very severe. And so if we look at the market setup, we have had still like a relatively decent recovery in volumes, and then obviously imports have been falling. But then obviously there still seems to be more pressure on European prices as volumes from the import side are pulling back, and domestic volumes are basically recovering. So what is driving this significant price pressure in such an environment? Because usually, I guess I would understand it probably more if there was more direct volume pressure or more import pressure, but there seems to be less import pressure, and yet prices just kept dropping down, apparently, from your comments.
So here you have two effects. One effect is the trend. So when there is a trend in which prices are going down, and I explained why, so nickel pig iron, the situation in China, the price in China, etc. When there is this kind of trend, every buyer is very careful. Okay, we are just coming back from a period of destocking, which is not yet finished, because also the final demand has, in a certain sense, been lower. So we are in this period, and everybody is very careful, and nobody is pushing ahead inventory. So people are buying on the very short term, and they are not rebuilding. They are not rebuilding inventory. They have still enough in terms of number of days of rotation of the inventory they need. So in this period, you have no imports, because we have no imports since many months. Because after the huge wave of imports of last year, today, with the normalization of price, or with the price which have been pushed down more, there is no interest to imports with the level of protection that we have in Europe. So the protection are acting correctly. The demand is not high. We need still to reduce a little bit the inventory, and demand is also not high. this is the situation of Europe. Is clear?
Yeah, I guess thanks for clarifying. I guess what I'm still surprised is that you basically say that obviously imports are not really interesting. So it seems to be more like a European market discipline issue here almost, which is dragging down prices. Or do you see this in a different way?
No, it's not a question of discipline or not. I think it's more the question that you have a certain kind, let's say, who imports are distributors. Distributors are in the stocking, and if they don't need, they buy only what they need. There are still 17% of imports in Q1. 17% is something which is more closer to a normal level of imports. Remember that the normal level of imports is around 22%. Huh? This has been established by the Commission during the safeguard. So we are a little bit below the normal. The market is a normal market in which there is no appetite to build up inventory because prices are going down. There are also some macro uncertainty. I mean, people are waiting a little bit. Huh? So there are good signs due to the fact that inflation maybe is slowing down. There are good signs on the fact that the energy prices are going down. So everybody needs to see what this represents for the industry, because these are good signs, and we need to see what this means for the industry when when this will be clarified in the next month. I am sure that the trend will become normal.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, thanks, Tim, for taking the question.
And our next question comes from Ioannis Masvoulas from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions, Tim. A few from my side, and the first just follow up on the situation with the strikes. Can you give us a bit of color if this is just a wage dispute, and if so, any indication on demands from the labor force and timing of resolution? And maybe you talked about the impact in Q1 being relatively modest, but can you talk about your expectation on volume and EBITDA impact for the second quarter, please?
So I think it's very clear what is the subject of the strike is this reform in France, which is linked to the age of retirement. So this is at the level of national strikes in a context indeed in which there is a general tension also on salary, etc. But it's not specific to our industry. Huh? It is a national subject which is in France, and we suppose that all the industry will tell you exactly the same. When I told you the impact is very low, double digit or one digit EBITDA. So, and this will depends a lot on the evolution of the strikes during Q2, which is still unpredictable. Huh? So the 1st of May, there was, you have seen all in the newspaper, how strong was the reaction on the streets. So we don't know, but we believe that it will calm down.
Okay, and maybe just one point to clarify then, is it a combination of operational disruptions to your plants as well as logistical disruptions when you talk about the high single digit million EBITDA impact? That's the sort of combination of the two factors.
It is that, because you have to recover when you disrupt, there is a discontinuity in the business, in the process, and you have to recover some delays. You might have transport costs which are higher. You can have an extraordinary time that it has been paid, something like this. It is relatively low because the utilization rate is not 100%, so it is limited. It is visible, but it's limited.
Okay, perfect. That's very useful. And just a second question around the Q2 guidance for, I understand it's sort of lower EBITDA in S&E Europe. And here, I just wanted to clarify, because typically you would expect seasonally better volumes. You mentioned the energy cost unwind and easing of destocking pressure. So these aspects should be positive relative to Q1. So when we talk about lower EBITDA, is that predominantly driven by the strike effects? Or, yeah, if you can provide a bit of color there, that'd be very useful.
So thanks. I would like to clarify something. In general, we don't give guidance between Europe and Brazil. So it's globally on the electrical and steel, stainless steel sector. So it is a mix of different effects. So there are effects which are linked to prices, as I have explained, due to the evolution of price in China, and still some careful, buying attitude of the distributor. We see that prices are under pressure, so this is one effect. And the second is globally, as international prices are lower, there is also some effect in Brazil of the international prices. So it's mostly a question of price in a context of limited demand and a lot of wait and see attitude from all the buyers.
Okay, that's very clear. Maybe just one last one for me on your comment around some of the end markets in Europe softening relative to the beginning of the year. Are there any clear standouts in terms of that softening? Is it construction, or are there any of the other sectors worth highlighting in that sort of comment?
So, indeed, the construction is the most apparent of the sectors. I will say that construction is bad mood, while the other sectors are slightly below average, and only automotive remains in the right direction.
Okay, that's great, Tim. Thanks a lot.
Welcome.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Tristan Gresser from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my questions. I have two. The first one on Brazil. Can you discuss a little bit what's going on in Brazil? We've seen probably a weak start of the year for carbon steel there. And even putting seasonality aside, are you also seeing some softer real activity levels? And how is it different between, let's say, private industrial consumption? And also on Brazil, if you can just touch on the mix effect you expect into Q2. Thank you.
Okay. Indeed, Brazil has two effects. The first effect is the global prices. You know that this has always an effect on the price in Brazil. And some soft demand. So Brazil has gone through a very good period, and now there is some relatively lower. But for us, it's mostly a question of mix, in the sense that we have been in a very high demand of stainless steel during the last quarters. Now the demand is normalizing, and we have a mixed effect, which means that other products, as you remember, we are always using other products in the management of the mix and to load the mill, which is running at full capacity. So then, what is the other point was about the private consumption and so what this is what you mean? Yeah, I mean,
yes.
Please go on. You want to clarify?
Yes, on the real demand side, have you seen some softening, and especially between, let's say, private consumption and industrial consumption?
So I think the only different we can see is that while in Europe automotive is the most brilliant, maybe it's not the most brilliant in Brazil, but that's all. In the rest, the lower let's say consumer demand is not due to the other sectors which are performing correctly, like the white goods, which is doing well. The food, all the agriculture is still performing well.
Okay, thank you. And my second question, if I can push a little bit on the CapEx side. First, could you remind us what growth projects from the Leadership Journey are included in the 2023 CapEx guidance? And given the progress on those projects and the new projects you mentioned in the prepared remarks that could come, is it still fair to assume that CapEx will potentially remain stable after 2023 around this 300 million mark? Or when you look at those investments that you will require to reach the 2025 targets, you'll need to push that a little bit higher. Thank you.
So, hi, Tristan. Let me take this one. The CapEx for this year, so there's a couple of things you have to understand. First thing, in my podcast, and Tim clarified that when we said accelerating, we meant basically we've announced these CapEx investments the last 18 months on different parts of our mills, and I'll come to that in a minute. And we typically wait for one leadership journey to be done to start the next leadership journey's projects. This time we're not doing that. That means we continue to accelerate and move that in as soon as possible. So just to make sure the gains are there and also to meet our 2025 transformation where we have promised 300 million euros in growth. That's the first part. The second part is that as part of this year's investments, we have clearly spoken about the investment, first of all, where we are doing in the cold rolling mill. If you remember, we announced actually in the end of 2020, where we said that we would come back and invest in our downstream, optimizing and closing instead of three cold rolling mills, to put two cold rolling mills in the middle of France, which can do more products. So that's an investment which is happening. The second thing is for improving our mix. We have spoken about the AOD investment in Genk. And then there are hot rolling mill investments in Brazil and in alloys, which are taking place, which will aid their transformation. So these are the investments which are happening this year. And this you can see in our presentation also on slide 8, when the gains are coming and where the investments are happening. So it's clearly there. Now, in terms of next year, we would typically we do not guide for the entire year, you know that. Also because, you know, the part of our CapEx, which is considered maintenance CapEx, is flexible depending on the utilization. So we'd like to look at it. But the strategic CapEx you have received in Capital Market Day, most of the strategic CapEx planned for the transformation for 2025 already announced.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Maxime Kogge from Oddo. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. So first question is on Brazil too. So you pointed out the positive impact from new tariffs on Indonesian imports in the last call. Do you see some first benefit from that as the year is now pretty much advanced? I know that imports were very high last year. I mean, should we expect that to go down significantly, or is Asian pricing too low to really be offset by this new tariffs? So that's my first question.
So fundamentally, Brazil has always imported a certain part. So we have a very high market share, but the market is open to imports, even if protected by the import duties and tariffs. What we have, blocked was the dumping of Indonesia, which was possible due to the subsidy that they have received. And this is mostly an effect on the lowest price that were put in Brazil from Indonesia, which were impacting the market. But then the rest of the market will be a balanced supply between our domestic production and the imports.
Okay, and the second question, yeah, is regarding share buybacks. There hasn't been any new share buybacks since early Q4, and still you are generating a lot of cash in Q1. What can you say on this topic? Do you feel constrained by the current weak environment, or do you feel encouraged by the still healthy cash generation in terms of?
No, we are not. The two points you have raised are not blocking us. We are maintaining our policy of shareholder returns, and so you can be confident that this will remain. But we have also consideration which depends on the geographical and local situation. So we tend to, let's say, to consider that this is not the right moment. We have done a share buyback at the end of last year. So now, if there will be the right moment and we will be able to do this in the future.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Krishan Agarwal from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks a lot for taking my question. One for Tim. See, you said the energy cost is sort of unwinding, but then if you were to compare the energy cost to the level of 2021, I guess there is still 50 to 100 euros per ton of additional cost for the stainless steel mills. So is that something you are seeing in your P&L, or and then have you been able to pass on these energy costs to your customers?
So I know, Krishan, you wanted Tim to answer that, but let me attempt, and after that, Tim can complete if he wants to. So yes, this price delta, like you say, is always there for all European competitors. What has disappeared is that among different European competitors, there used to be energy parity and disparity. In 2022, this has disappeared, so almost everyone's operating at same levels. So we are not at a disadvantage to the rest of the market. That's something to keep in mind when you talk about pricing. The second thing is that Tim has spoken about a price squeeze also led by China demand situation. Now, what part of that is because we are not able to pass on 50 euros energy, or what part of it is because the global price situation is depressed? I'm not able to split up, Krishan. So.
No, I think if I can complement, today the major effect on price is really the situation, the macro situation and the global situation of prices led by China, the nickel, pig iron, etc. So this is not something that it's of a magnitude which is much higher than the simple pass through of the energy cost.
Understand. And then my second question is on the recycling business. I mean, this business is averaging close to 45 million euros of EBITDA run rate for the past four quarters. I mean, is that something kind of we should take it as a structural run rate for this business? And considering that, I mean, has your payback period calculation being massively beaten on the upside with these run rates for the acquisition?
So, Krishan, no, we do not believe that this is structural. We do see, and we have always published also this, are specific circumstances in the recycling business. We guided to, and we still stick by, that 55 million euros per year on an average is our over-the-cycle EBITDA for the recycling business. So, they have been performing above average. We have said that it is definitely a good advantage for us to have, also because of the 24 million euro synergies which we have promised, which, remember, show up on our Stainless Europe balance sheet. First thing. The second thing is the fact that is it a acquisition which is considered with a good payback? Yes, I mean, you have the numbers. You know that we did buy it for 30 million euros of equity. So, yes, in this case, the timing has worked well, and the team has worked also very hard to deliver these numbers, especially in a difficult year like last year and also in the first quarter. So kudos to the team there. Now we are on track to deliver synergies, and that will also help us improve the value of the business. And we are on track there also. This year we expect to have achieved 2/3 of the synergy by end of the year. So we are on track there. Now we have to understand, when we look at the segment, there is also a component coming from your renewables, which is our forests, our bioenergy forests in Brazil. Now in this also, we have announced investments and we have intensified to improve the profitability and also the sales from this business. So that business is also contributing about 20% higher than what it used to contribute in the past as part of the larger Aperam group. So these two effects combined are contributing this specific set of circumstances. So structural, we have guided to over the cycle recycling 55 million euros, plus you can add another 15 million euros for renewables. That's the structural guidance overall, 15 to 20 million euros we've guided to. So yeah, over the cycle. So the past performance has been above average.
Yeah, so just to clarify, 55 from recycling, 15 for renewable, and 24 million synergies.
The 24 million synergies will show up in stainless. Sorry, 24 million synergies will show up in stainless, Krishan, as we have always said.
Okay.
So this is the starting. So just to clarify, this is the starting point. Of course, we are expanding the business. And so this Aperam Recycling Renewables is becoming one of the pillars of Aperam, and will be very visible in our numbers. This is why we are showing more clearly since the acquisition of ELG. So the expectation is that even if this quarter has been a little bit higher, but you will see over the historical numbers, a growth of this business and a stability above the cyclicality of the typical stainless steel business.
Understand. And then quick follow-up on Sud's explanation. So is it fair to assume that when you guide for the Q2, you assume a normalizing quarter from a recycling and renewable business point of view? And then if the market turns out to be better, that probably is an upside.
Yes, I would say that this is something which we have to wait and see, because we have always said that recycling has an order book of about 6 weeks. So it's even a shorter order book than the stainless business. So we'll have to keep a look on that. But we are looking at, we have guided to normalizing compared to the record numbers we've seen this quarter.
Okay. And the last final question, maybe of a housekeeping nature, the eliminations item has been a bit of a volatile in the last 3 to 4 quarter, from between positive and negative. What would be your suggestion for Q2 modeling point of view, from just the elimination item?
I have presented in my podcast, Krishan, I expect it to reduce. As the prices go down, the pricing between the segments also go down, and this means that I expect the elimination to reduce.
Okay. Thanks a lot. That's it from my side.
Thank you. As a reminder, to ask a question at this time, please signal by pressing star 1 now. And our next question comes from Tom Zhang from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, afternoon, gents. Thanks for taking the question. Just one final one for me. The standstill in Q3, I understand that's Genk again. Maybe if you just clarify what that's for and how long it's going to be. Should we expect another 6-week impact similar to Q1? And how the impact on EBITDA again sort of spreads out? Is it mostly going to be a Q3 issue, or is it going to be spread out over Q3 and Q4? Thanks.
Hey, Tom. So if you remember last year when we were talking about it in our Capital Markets Day, we did announce that this is going to be a 3-month-long investment. And when we saw that the market demand was loosening up in the first half of the year, we split that investment into 2 parts and pulled ahead first part, which is 6 weeks. So it is the same investment. It is just that it's been split up into two parts to take advantage of the market situation. Just we are clear on that one, that part. So if you know earnings impact, there's two parts. One is the increased fixed cost part, which is, you know, we do it in summer just because we take advantage of also the market situation, right? The next part is basically something which remains to be seen, which is that how Q4 market develops, because the impact comes not primarily from reduced volumes, like Tim said, because this is planned into guidance already. The impact comes in because you build inventories ahead of time, and this inventories get shipped in the last quarter of the year. So if prices go up or down, that will have an impact. So is that clear?
Yes, very thank you. And just to clarify, you've obviously split it into the mill works totally fine, you know, at the moment. There's no sort of change operationally because you've partially done the AOD and you're just finishing it off later. That's right, right?
So the part is basically, I'll start and then Tim can add on, is that we are doing this investment to improve our mix, to produce the latest mix possible. The new investment consists of two things. One is creating the basic new unit, but also now adding, decarb-related investments where we take in cogeneration, we take in energy recovery and everything. So this is the split, and that's what is happening. Tim, you want to add something?
Yeah, indeed. So this the fact that this standstill is a bit longer is because we use this opportunity also to increase the cogeneration and the recovery of energy from the melt shop, and this means that on top of the decarbonization we have also savings in energy. So all this of course it takes a little bit longer than simply installing a new AOD.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And it seems there are no further questions in the queue. With this, I'd like to hand the call back over to Tim Di Maulo, CEO, for any additional or closing remarks. Over to you, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for all your questions and for this discussion. So you have seen that the situation of the environment is has been tougher than has been in the previous, let's say, years or last 2 years. But also you can see that the results are there and they are fully in line with our let's say step to the 300 million. So we are in just in the middle of the leadership journey gains and what we have promised. We can see that the results which are coming in a very, let's say, tough moment all in all, because prices have gone down. You have seen that volumes are at a low level, at some historically low level. That cost also, external costs have been very high in terms of energy, gas, etc. So, but all in all, we are continuing to have a good cash generation. We are delivering in line with our business plan, and this despite tougher conditions than we are expecting in the business plan. This comforts us a lot that we are in the good way, and I hope that you will be let's say recognizing this in the figures that we are showing. So I would like to stress the fact that we plan to reward our shareholders in line with our financial policy, but we have the flexibility and we use this flexibility. So thank you for attending the call, and I wish you a good day and look forward to meeting you again. Bye-bye.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. Ladies and gentlemen, you may now disconnect.